Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. Live. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, August 12th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, Michael. You know, as always, I'm glad to be here. It's a big planetary day. We'll talk about it when you start.
Absolutely. And so glad to have you, as always. So glad to have those that join us in the live chat and appreciate those that take the time to catch up with us later in your week. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Of course, we're going to start tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. Those are 1, do no harm, do right. 2, we believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3, we believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4, we are all equal, one planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5, we recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6, we are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7, self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8, metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9, expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. So tonight, we're going to talk about a few things. I know we're going to get into some near-death experiences and, kind of talking about that in depth. But, Dr. Vicki, you were absolutely right. We have the parade of planets and an eclipse going on in different parts of the world.
So a Mercury shower, a new moon, a big planetary alignment, and a solar eclipse, which could largely be seen in Iceland and Spain, over there. And so it's like, whoa, big shift of energy. And Wendy just reminded me, in the chat, that today was Project Anchor Day. You know, that conspiracy theory that Earth would lose gravity for so many seconds, 7 seconds or something.
I mean, the power did fluctuate in my office.
Yeah, well, I mean, did you lose gravity, Michael?
I mean,
maybe. Float to the ceiling?
That's not how gravity works. Momentum would keep me going in the same direction anyway until I did something to push me in a different direction. I don't really know what I'm saying. I'm just about
apparently it was scheduled for 9:33 Eastern time this morning. So.
Yeah, no, I was definitely firmly planted. In fact, I felt heavier than usual, if anything. But that could have been the croissant I had for breakfast.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, Wendy's saying that, you know, where she is in Louisiana, the sky was pretty amazing last night. I couldn't see anything. It's cloudy here, but
yeah, here too.
You know, I'm in Western Canada, so apparently Eastern North Canada could be seen a partial solar eclipse. But apparently big energy shifts today, and what people are claiming. But as always, to me, it's more important that it's a new moon. So. Planetary shifts. This one, it hasn't happened for a couple of hundred years, and people talk about, you can go look this up anywhere, you guys, it hasn't happened for so long, and what events took place the last time these alignments occurred. So, it's all really interesting reading, so I just sit back in my little house and I observe. I dared to go shopping today, Michael. I will tell you that. I needed some groceries. Well, actually, the cat needed food. So that was...
Oh, a cat can go out and hunt. What are you talking about? No, I'm kidding. But, well, how was the air quality? Did you have to wear a mask out?
Oh, today was such a relief. The last few days, because we've got big fires up here, state of emergency, it was so bad these last few days. I couldn't leave the house without a mask. And even then I come home and strip my clothes off because my car is covered in ash. You could taste it. It you know, your eyes hurt. I mean, I could barely see across the road. Yeah, it was pretty bad. The wind changed, so we're getting a bit of a reprieve right now, but it's temporary.
I want to say I know the significance of the fires, and I know the difference between that kind of ash and smoke and that kind of quality that gets into everything. But I would say if I was writing a sitcom and I had you coming in from that and cleaning your eyes off and, you know, getting all the ash off and changing clothes and then lighting up a cigarette or two, that'd be a good scene writing.
Yeah, that is.
Now, I'm a smoker. Putting out anything. I watch too much TV is the problem.
Well, just up here across the lake, 230 homes burned down. A lot of displaced people. There's a little further south, there's more people evacuated. Well, put it this way, I think there's 52 areas evacuated in all of British Columbia. But in this town, an hour and a half south of me, 21,000 people are displaced. And they haven't been able to measure the damage yet. So,
this is something that this is not what we're talking about tonight, I know, but it is something that we are going to have to deal with more and more.
Yeah,
only resource management, fresh water, and this is a situation that is crossing borders. And, you know, we need to work together more now than ever.
Yes, we do.
So, I just, you know, I am, you know, stupid jokes aside, I really am wishing everybody in there the best because, you know, we've had, you know,
I found my cat carrier in the storage, but there's some spot fires that they got under control, you know, pretty quick here, but it's right up behind me.
You know,
just on the outskirts of town. So
it's one of those things that it does bring us together in the sense that we do. One of the brighter things about humanity is that we do tend to pull together in times like this, where, you know, we kind of abandon some of the nationalism and we come together to help one another when we can. That being said, it reminds me of something, and this is my last thing I'll say, and then I know we'll get on topic, but it reminds me of something that, you know, somebody once said. They were recently, when Project Hail Mary came out, they were talking about how their favorite movies, you know, there is no villain, you know, movies like Project Hail Mary, where it is the situation, it's, you know, fighting against the natural, you know, not only world, but universe and things like that, and human creativity that makes some of the best stories. And I think that's poignant in the sense that we can come together. We can use human ingenuity to tackle these problems together.
Well, people have been pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's kind of people are a mixed bag, but, you know, they do pull out some nice gems every now and again.
Yeah, my friend's husband here, he works with the Humane Society, and he's been swamp busy, along with the animal auxiliary care, you know, and then all the other people with their, you know, trucks and gear and stuff hauling animals and trying to save them, you know, besides the people. So it's how the communities have come together. It's really quite astounding. You know, they're pretty amazing. And you're right, Michael. It's pretty cool in that way. It's a great loss and devastating in other ways, but when you see the flip side of humanity, you know, rising to the challenge is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, let's talk about that because, I mean, if there's any way we can make this segue into near-death experiences, it's the idea of a type of shared experience. And near-death experiences are one of those things. Even, you know, it is part of that, tackling one of the biggest, you know, mystery of the natural world, you know, death and what is it, what it comes after it. Near-death experiences are something, I know we've both been kind of looking into it, that it is something that does seem universal in terms of how humans have reported on it throughout time, right? So, Dr. Vig, you're definitely the more expert voice in this arena, so if you don't mind, why don't you take us off?
Oh, well, I mean, to start off, I think this group largely is familiar with us talking about it in previous programs, but, you know, those in the archive and a couple of newcomers. And, near-death experience is that profound experience when you're clinically dead for a second and you come back with some other kind of memory or experience. Now, what I didn't know, Michael, because I looked this up, is there's different types of experiences. And I found this when I was doing more research. There's the pleasurable ones, which is the ones that we, you know, most often hear about, you know, peace, love, and all that stuff. Distressing ones, fear, isolation, you know, scared, sure. And then there's what's called a veridical, where these people have some kind of details of events happening around them while they were clinically unresponsive. I didn't know that was the name for it, but it's like leaving your body and watching events that are happening and reporting back. So these different types. I mean, I knew about that one, just not that that's what it was called. So it's like we have to really be a little pragmatic for a second to say that, you know, psychology likes to take a different kind of approach to it, talking about oxygen deprivation, trauma, chemical surges in the brain. Mm-hmm. You know, they have these kinds of explanations, but not necessarily metaphysical explanations, you know? So it's, are they real? Well, are they fake? It's,
right.
Depends who you're talking to. I happen to have had one, so I mean, I have my own experience.
Well, I think that we can say definitively that the experience is real. You know, what causes it, I think, is the only debate. And I also think that we could agree on the mechanisms, you know, what's happening with the machinery. But you're absolutely right. It doesn't address anything with the metaphysical, right? Because when it comes to a lot of differences between people who are metaphysicians, people who want to think in deeper terms or try to find something that we can kind of feel is there, that layer beyond, right? I think that we agree on the mechanisms, we agree on the biology, we agree on how, you know, genetics and DNA and all these things work, but what we are open to, they can shut the door on. And I think that near-death experiences are, again, there are a lot of potential explanations, sure, and I'm open to a purely, you know, materialist kind of version, but I don't know. I mean, I only done some light reading, you know, just some basic Googling and some just review here, you know, and there, just looking for some interesting things, because I'm trying to tie it back to how long have we been talking about this, right? And it has been a very long time. You know, the best example, and I'll just kind of hit the highlights here on, it's just Wikipedia, nothing deep, but I've never actually read Plato's work, The Republic. But in it, he has details of a Greek soldier, and this is kind of, you know, Plato always mixes reality and makes stories. You know, he uses real events and fake events, blah, blah, blah. But he talks about a Greek soldier who dies in battle. He awakens on his funeral pyre 12 days later. He describes a panoramic soul journey going through judgment, reincarnation, and all these different things that also coincides with different accounts that come from as far east as the ancient Chinese societies and, you know, Bronze Age civilizations that date back 3,000 years ago, talking about people that, you know, because again, we in the modern era have tools that we're much better at detecting when there's brain death, when the heart stops. You know, there's a reason why there's that kind of, it didn't happen a lot, but there was a real thing where people had little bells, you know, with tied to a string that went to the coffin just in case they got buried by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, was this guy dead or was he just horribly injured in a coma or something like that and had a very low heartbeat they couldn't detect easily? And did he have that near-death experience that, you know, then becomes, these stories pick up, these people were in battle constantly, you know, these Greek city-states, they, you know, violence and warfare and not even that, the natural world, death and near-death were very common things. So I think that leads into a lot of the spirituality of, global indigenous cultures of those. I'm talking about those peoples, the earliest written and known sources of, you know, thinking about metaphysics, right, in the early days. So that's kind of where I was looking at it and trying to, you know, how long have we been talking about this? Because scientifically, we've been talking about it since, what, the 70s, something like that?
Actually, you know, it was Dr. Raymond Moody who made it most famous in 1975 when he published Life After Life. Well, and so in our space of time, by years, he was the one who, he interviewed like over 100 case studies. And that's, you know, a lot of things, the tunnel, the light, profound peace, you know, that kind of thing. So that's where, we can accredit Dr. Moody for, you know, bringing it to the big social thing. And people have written about it before. But keep in mind that we didn't talk a lot of metaphysical things prior to that because it was either limited to science experiments with governments or considered evil and against the church. And keep in mind, too, that it was Sigmund Freud who was the first one who dared, I didn't agree with everything he did, but he was the first one who dared to defy the church to say psychology and the church had nothing to do with each other. And he was ridiculed and punished a lot during his day. So that's still relatively, you know, new. So fast forward to 1975, you know, out comes Dr. Raymond Moody. So that's, I think that was a pretty bold thing of him, you know, at the time. I mean, there were other ones, but they, you know, a lot of people just stayed underground. But, you know, thanks. Let's talk about some things that are in the chat right now. Kevin is saying 2 years ago, he says, when I gained consciousness after a close call operation, I was so disoriented, I thought I was flying overhead. I had more faith, thank you, in me than the medical doctor, so I knew what was going. I was going to land somewhere. Fortunately, I did. Astral travel in an NDE is really more common than people realize, and has been written about. And trust me, since Raymond Moody, lots of people have written about NDEs. But thanks for sharing that, Kevin. That it's like the overhead of seeing your body, but you're still connected by what we used to call in the old days is that silver thread. So we get this, you know, up through the top of the head and down the spine is this silver thread to the soul or spirit, whatever you want to call it. I have a distinction between the two, but most people don't, so we'll just go with that. And that you never go too far that your cord will break. You always come back to it. And you can go out as far as you trust yourself to do that with, because it's really about self-trust and how far you fly. Some people only leave the room. Other people can go into space and back. It's a matter of how comfortable, relaxed, and safe you feel, again, with your own consciousness.
You said that going to space and back. Do you mean literal space above, or do you think different planes and representations?
Well, I don't know. I've been to the stars.
Well, I mean, did it give you more of like a literal vibe? Did you go out and it was kind of just like, you know, the white sun and the stars around, or did you get more of a vibe that you were kind of traveling through planes?
I don't know if I can find the words for it, Michael. An astral, I don't do it anymore. I have a hard enough time being here, but that was part of the expanding how far can I challenge myself? And what can I do in that regard with consciousness? So meditating to that point where I could fly I would fly as high as the sky, and it's a different feeling out there than it is here. And it's like, you're in this space and time, but then it goes into stars and out there, like nighttime. So how far out there had I gone, I can't tell you. Because I think that's a perception thing too, maybe, or space and time. I don't
well,
know.
Well, I would think that, and again, I don't know, I haven't been on the astral plane or anything like that, but I would think that when you kind of get to that, my feeling on it, belief on it, imagination on it, is that when you get to that kind of spiritual realm, right, that if you want to define the soul, if you can define the soul, and whatever it moves on to after this existence in whatever form, that it's something that kind of transcends kind of how we think about it. And I think that it would be something that, oh, I had it perfectly in my head just a moment ago, but then I looked up and this is the strangest thing. Vicky knows. I was telling her about this beforehand. I've been battling with my air conditioner. And anyway, while I was talking, I happened to look up and I have a little string that I tied to see how well the system's blowing, and it's blowing really strong. And I was happy about that. It means my air conditioner's getting broken. I thought, wait, what was my wonderfully worded train of thought that I had in my head? But what I'm trying to say is that it is something that would transcend kind of the physical realm that we're in. It would be something that moves into the non-linear existence that's, you know, more abstract, that's not tied to the physicality of this time and space kind of existence. Is that vibing at all with you? Or am I?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's so many ways to look at this. An indigenous elder that I had met, again, we're talking a few decades ago, when I had shared with him that I drowned when I was 5, he said he also drowned when he was 5. Mm-hmm. And he also felt different than others. And he said, we are people who live with a thin veil between the worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So it's...
Wait. How old were you when you almost drowned?
When I died?
Oh, you actually did die in this life. That's what you're saying. That.
Well, I left my body.
Oh.
And had to be revived.
Yeah.
It hurt. It's fine. It's funny because the leaving the body didn't hurt at all. Nothing. I think it's that panic initially.
Right.
But once that panic is gone, you surrender to it. It's, And I didn't see any big tunnels of light. It was this big white sky, you know, like I was in the middle of a big cloud out there. And it was so peaceful. I wasn't afraid at all. And since then, I've not been afraid of death. No, getting dead, that's a different problem. But he had had the same experience. I've talked to others who, my best friend Susan here, she also drowned when she was young. She's not afraid of death at all. You know, it's this experience of, I think it's a moment of enlightenment, to be honest, of an awakening. And so did that, and I can't tell you, I had other experiences prior to being 5 that I remember. Yeah. Unfortunately, I remember way too much in my life. But did that experience open more psychic centers, more intuitive centers? It's possible. Because a lot of people claim, no matter their age, if they've had an NDE, they feel very changed. You know, more sensitive, more intuitive.
Context, it provides perspective.
I think so. But they're also more in tune.
So you're, you mean not only psychologically changed, but physically changed in the sense that they have they've opened perhaps more of their third eye kind of.
And then, of course, there's other weird experiences where people come back and speak a different language. And I can't even go there.
Yeah, that's a
But that's a different part of the brain. And,
well, yeah. again, we're talking about the mechanics, but we're coming back to where does the mind exist? You know, human beings are a universe unto ourselves of different creatures that are working together, that are, you could look at human society as kind of like the macro of what the human body is in the micro, right? You have different departments, you have different things, and the better it runs, the better you are, et cetera. So, it is just very interesting to me. And, where is the mind? Where is the soul? How does this exist? That's why I come back to AI, and I know this isn't near death. But if consciousness can plug into something that can give it awareness, right? If consciousness doesn't exist in the body, it's something that's non-local. This lends itself into things like astral projection, which I've always been curious about. It's interesting. And there's a couple things, I've been reflecting on reincarnation and death in the last little bit. Just because, I've had clients that have been dealing with these things and loss. I happened to watch a video recently that was a comedy. It's a creator I like. He usually does a lot of funny videos. He can be, touching at moments. And this one was one of those. It was talking about reincarnation, coming back, and the choices we make. But I will tell you that it is something that just really excites the mind, what is beyond. And these near-death experiences have, when I look at them, when I think about them, when I really sit and think about them, it is fascinating because of the implications and because of what it ties to. And that can be different for anybody. Anybody can come at a near-death experience with their lens, right? You can have Christians that come at it. You can have, people hear different things, there's these, again, Greek stories of, near-death experiences, and, it was in the olden times, it was much more common where you would see the gods and you'd see the powers that be in the elements, in the things. So, it was common. And again, all the fact that you had people that were were nearly dying at a much, higher rate. It's something that has always bound us. And it's something that I think lends itself to this idea that we are more than some of our parts, that this spark that we have of consciousness transcends this. And I think this idea of a near-death experience has lent itself to human attempts at understanding this for a very long time. It was my tack.
Well, one of the things I wanted to also bring up is the shared death experience. They talk about the mind, where is it located? In 1985, my brother died. Well, it's self-inflicted. He had surgery, but he died on the table. I was at the hospital at the time. So when the surgeon came out and said, he was gone, I went into a panic, like he's calling me, and I demanded to see his body. And when I was allowed in the little room, of course, people there checking, making sure I'm not freaking out, it was an immediate calm. And I went over and I put, my hand, I'm on the right side of the gurney, put my right hand on his forehead and, my other hand by his side. And I watched this beautiful light of energy, like a little cloud of energy, rise up from his solar plexus. And I knew that he was waiting for me to be there before he left. And it was so peaceful. You just kind of feel so blessed and grateful for that experience. Like, don't get me wrong, the trauma of losing him was still with me today. But that experience of the mind is that connection between the spirit and the body. The brain is just an organ, like any other organ. I believe that what I came to believe, and again, people can say otherwise, I think it's in the umbilical cord. So when we're fed life, and everything hits you in the gut first. It's that it that never ends. Like you're given life there. You enter through there. And that helps to connect the brain, body, spirit into a creation of a mind. And it's that mind energy that is your spirit. And I since evolved what I believe is we're still, our spirit is a fraction of the soul. So, you know, Stephen asked a question there. What is mind? Is it the receiver of signal from a larger intelligence? Well, I think the soul is a part of the universe. It's a universal energy, a larger intelligence. And when we come here as a mind, the spirit, mind spirit, is a fraction of that larger intelligence, if you will, Stephen. That's my theory. It's, you know, and thanks for sharing. Stephen said he had the same experiences with his mom as I did with my brother. She waited several hours for him to arrive. Yeah, it's very profound, these experiences. But again, it, in my evolution of developing as a human being and remembering my spiritual self, is the integration, of course, the study of metaphysics, still trying to stay grounded, you know, still trying to, working on, not just trying to, working on living in the humanity of being on this planet. So to me, that's why I stopped doing things like astral projections and, you know, okay, I get the gist. But so the task is learning to live here more whole and be as truthful with yourself as possible. Mm-hmm. And the biggest challenge, I think, of being human is, and living in a truth, is walking your talk. Mm. And, you know, standing on the side of right, no matter the consequence. And you know, because everybody has fears, inhibitions, you know, all kinds of, you know, the other negatives that have infiltrated our conditioning and our psyches over time. And how do you deprogram those things? How do you kind of shake them off and reprogram yourself and become more integrated with your spiritual self? Now, I'm not saying, you know, hats off to me. Because I swear like a trooper, you know, and I like a glass of wine, you know, all those earthly things here, because it makes me feel better. It's just living in the humanness of it. And so after a while, and again, maybe it's because of my experiences, the NDEs and the shared death experiences are just the reminder that of who and what we are. And that's the preferential view I have. Hmm. Is that's my preference to believe. And is that just to give me comfort? Sure. But I like to believe that my experiences stand for something. And it's a cumulative. It's not like, oh, that happened once and, you know, I'm holier than thou. That's not it. It's over. You know, I'm 71 this year, so it's,
you know,
go ahead.
Science shows that the more you curse, the longer you live. Are you aware of that?
I heard that. I love it.
You know, there are, there's just a lot
yeah,
of stuff
smarter
in this we can talk. Also very true. I didn't want to say I also can curse them. I like to get inventive with my cursing, and some that not and you know not going there. We're keeping this family friendly, but I will say there's a couple things I kind of wanted to, and I know we're kind of coming into our card territory. So let us know in chat if you want to get one. But this is something that really interests me because I love how that ties into, you know, everything else about metaphysics in the sense of what is awareness? What does it mean to be alive? If we can have these astral projections, if we can have these out-of-body experiences where you can look around, where you can perhaps experience something of, you know, of the next phase, it has enormous implications. And I also want to leave with two things. One, I had heard this recently, so I Googled it real quick to reference it. Mark Twain had a famous quote about death, and he said, "I do not fear death. I have been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it." And that, you know, it's just such a pure, you know, Twain quote, right? And it reminds us that, again, just like you said, you know, you can't fear death. We've been there before, whatever that means, right?
And well, I just told a friend that, and I'll end on this note, is that my obituary will now read, "She's gone back to the home planet. Don't worry about her haunting you. You're on your own."
Well, what happens? Okay, you say that, but now what happens if you do haunt me because you can't, for some reason, get back to the home planet and you need me to flip a switch or something and you haunt me? Now I'm not going to think it's you because you told me that you weren't going to haunt me.
Oh, I'll just be your fairy godmother. All right.
Well, as long, well, that's fine. I could, yeah, I can work with that. All right, fair enough. But,
that's funny. You're taking all the wind out of my sails for the home planet, Michael.
Well, I mean, maybe I help you get to the home planet is what I'm saying. But you have to haunt me to flip the switch back on for CERN because you need to use it to slingshot you there. I don't know how these things work.
You can astral travel and visit me.
Well, no, I can't. I've been working on it. It doesn't happen. Unless you count dreams. I'm pretty sure I ask to travel in dreams, but I digress.
I'm sure you do.
I'm looking through here, and I think is Kevin first, or was Stephen asking for? Okay, Kevin.
No, I think Kevin is.
Okay, I think he was agreeing with us, and the topic is how I read. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So I, even though I announced it, am completely unprepared. Let me just go ahead and grab my cards here.
And for those who don't know, we Michael chooses an Inner Oracle Self-Discovery card developed by Dr. Douglas Kelly. And then I pick a tarot card as a support, and we'll see what shakes out.
All right. So, Dr. Kevin, I have for you tonight number 11, awareness. Every human being has a responsibility to increase their awareness for fulfillment and peaceful coexistence. People generally do the best they can according to their current level of awareness, knowledge, experience, and resources. This card may indicate that an increased awareness in some area is needed. Continue to increase your awareness of self and others through observation, acquired knowledge, and a positive attitude.
I like this, Kevin. You know, when you have that awareness next to the Ten of Cups, the Ten of Hearts, which to me is largely about family and community, you may be seeing your role differently. Wendy's saying that you had awareness back in July 1st, to be honest. So that's Wendy, our card keeper, for those who don't know. How do I say that? I have the feeling and the picture in my head, Kevin, but it's seeing the relevance of your role in a new light, if you will, which is a little like that wisdom or insightfulness that comes with it. I think it's so gentle and easy, but it's very profound. It's like moving into a different view or consciousness. So, but again, you know, you're human acting out your humanness just like everybody else. So, I think that's really cool.
I love it.
I do.
All right. Donna. All right. Sorry. Two things. Donna is next. I do have a card for you, but I'm keeping myself on mute. But active poll for our live listeners. Can you hear my dog Marley snoring? All right, Donna. He's going on like a chainsaw. Donna, for you tonight, I have number 17, reinvention. Nothing is more powerful or transformative than self-reinvention, resulting in a personal identity foundation shift. far-reaching and profound, such a personal reinvention shifts the foundation of your self-concept from external to internal. That, in turn, is vital to your future success and happiness. Re-examine your core values, ensure they are healthy, and answer the questions, what do I call a good day, and what else in my life should be reinvented?
Wow, I think the planets must be at work here, because you got the Chariot, Donna. Reinvention in the Chariot means you're taking charge, getting a clarity of who you are, where you want to be, where you want to go, how you want to get there. Oh, and Wendy's saying you had that card back in February. So it's this reinventing of yourself, the discovery of yourself. But the Chariot says, okay, you got the positive and the negative. You know what you're dealing with. You know the hurdles. You know the challenges. But you got this. So you're not hesitating like you may have in the past. So I think that's a really good affirmation to you. You've been doing the work and like moving forward now. I think that's awesome.
I love it. All right.
We have Wendy. Our card keeper Wendy wants a card.
Card keeper stuff. We're getting some patterns tonight because that was another repeat for Donna as well. But that's kind of funny. Wendy, you get number 27. Go with another 7. We have gains. Every choice and action has a trade-off and result. What are you willing to trade for this result or gain? A secondary gain has a price, and that has a price for getting what we want, and that price is denial of the truth of a situation or behavior. This may be the time to assess if something needs to be traded or for improved benefits. Healthy decisions are sure to bring about positive results and satisfying gains. So I hope that connects.
Well, the Ten of Diamonds is right in line with that. You know, Ten of Pentacles. Gains. You know, it's like, okay, where's money needlessly going out the door? Where does it need to be better invested? Because now it's more... And this isn't a bad thing to be a little materialistic, you know, because we all live here. Yeah, you know, you have to have skills when you come to Earth. So it's that Ten of Diamonds is all about the marketplace, how you put yourself in the marketplace, getting value for value and you know, what you think you're worth, Wendy. So, you know, maybe looking at the budget again, and what you don't need to spend anymore. Yeah, you know, it's like, okay, you got enough of that. Never mind. Put money here. But also wanting, I keep coming back to this, wanting more for yourself. Mm-hmm. So building your own little nest. I think that's great.
That is great.
I think it's awesome.
I love it.
We have Jeff next. Dr. Jeff.
Dr. Jeff, I have number 13 for you tonight. It's positive consciousness, which I think just hits for you. It is our soul's natural inclination to be positive. Therefore, positive consciousness transcends positive thinking. As human beings, we can find ourselves with a need to filter negativities and ill will. Be at peace with your natural self and continue displaying goodwill towards others. Don't hate hatred in your heart. Maintain your positive attitude even in the face of obstacles and discouragements, for they are temporary. When I saw that, I pulled that for you, Dr. Jeff, I thought that what better man could exemplify this card?
Well, I got the Wheel of Fortune. This is a good cycle for you to take chances, take risks, stepping out of your comfort zone, being positive. And every Wednesday he has a little joke video. You got to go to, you know, Blind Outdoorsman, for anybody who doesn't know, on social media. Very funny stuff. And today was about a duck. I'm not going to give it away, though. So, you're articulating, you're projecting better. Like, there's this, it's to me, course, I look for those things. But to me, it's this evolution of Jeff, and it's really come across. You're being interviewed by others in podcasts now, you know, and sharing your story. And I think that that's really important. But the Wheel of Fortune is, you know, this is your time. So watch it keep growing. That's great.
I love it. I love it. All right. So I think that's...
We have Audra.
No, it's already 9:45 Eastern. I don't think we have time to pull another card. But
You just wrote in the chat. You ever hear about Jimmy Kimmel's joke about not having enough time for Matt Damon all the time? That's funny. That's true.
It's a running
gag. All right, Audra.
But Audra, you get number 29 tonight. Pay it forward. Living with gratitude and responsibility extends generosity to others, even with random acts of kindness that offer no self-benefit except the satisfaction of heartfelt kindness. This may be a time to calm the spirit and lift the heart by giving forward without any particular reason, and you remind yourself that love is the center of all life. And is there a way you can pay it forward right now?
Well, the Ace of Clubs says you're being recognized for some of that very energy that you put out. Because we already know you, Audra. You're already giving forward, but it's like now the recognition or learning how to receive. You know, I think learning how to receive is tougher than knowing how to give. You know, when somebody's giving to me, I said, oh, you're trying to out-nice me. I hate that. It's like, how do you learn to receive grace graciously as well as gratefully? And then again, it's encouraging for us to continue to give more forward. So I think with the Ace of Clubs there, it's arriving into another place of comfort for yourself, confidence, you know, confidence with a self-certainty, Audra. And I can feel some new changes coming, stirring around in your life. That's my energy feeling of it. And it's in a really good way. So, you know, sometimes I get pictures in my mind, Michael. It's like an escalator. So you're on an escalator ride up, Audra. I love that. That's very cool.
All right.
Not an elevator. It's an escalator.
Every time I think about it. Every time I think about an escalator, I also think about a joke from Mitch Hedberg where he says, think about an escalator, it can never break. It can just become stairs.
Yeah, there you go. That's right.
All right.
Well, I've had a really good time tonight, everybody. And, you know, it's Wednesday night is my go-to night. Love chilling with you people, having great conversations. And, of course, you, Michael, you're always awesome.
Ah, that's too kind. But we all know that Dr. Vic here is just saying that. Now, I, on the other hand, genuinely love spending my Wednesdays with all y'all. And you know that I'm being genuine because I'm throwing out things like y'all and folksy sayings. But no, I'm kidding. No, I love you guys, and I love spending time with you, Dr. Vicky. It's been a minute. You know, we've been doing this for a while. And, you know, not only do I get to do this program with you, you're a friend, a confidant, a trusted advisor, and... when I do take over the world and create my glorious new empire, you will have a place on my council.
Just leave me
I probably shouldn't put this on recording. I knew
I'll be long gone before you, so it doesn't matter.
Well, as we're wrapping up tonight, you know, I've loved this discussion. It touches on so many things that I am curious about. Do you have any ideas for next week?
I don't at the moment. Oh, can I just say Audra's saying she's hopeful. Been interviewing for a new job. Just heard today I get a third final interview next week. Up, up, up. Good for you. Congrats.
I love it.
Yes.
I love it.
Oh, that's awesome, Audra. I feel really good about it.
I love it. And, hey, thanks for sharing that. I love going out on high.
Yeah.
This is good stuff. That's why I love this community. And I think, you know, we talked about the Parade of Planets tonight. I was reading up on them earlier before because I was wondering when they were. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about celestial patterns. Let's talk about the Parade of Planets and the future Parade of Planets that we're going to see. So
let's do that.
All right. We're doing it.
The Parades of Planets.
Well, everybody, it has been such a great night. Dr. Vic, you know I got to throw it to you before we sign off here.
Don't let them push you around out there, people. You know, I was at the grocery store today, and I got to the only one in the checkout. And I said, oh, my God, I'm not in a rush. There's nobody behind me. I said, nobody learned anything through COVID. And the girl started laughing. She said, you're absolutely right. Give space to other people, you know. Don't crowd them, but don't hurt them if they crowd you, you know. So just chill. Don't let them push you around out there.
Absolutely. I love it. Well, thank you, everybody. Can't wait to have you next week for our celestial discussion. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.